This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
Oh, and it's another beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's going to be the best day of the week. And then we get a few more really, really nice days. And then as a typical Memorial Day weekend, we get the rain for Monday.
always. It never fails. It's so weird. It's like crazy.
I can't count how many Memorial Day camping trips I've gone to over the years where everything is great Friday night and all day Saturday and Sunday is wonderful. And then as Sunday night creeps in, you're going, do we just pack it up now and call it a weekend?
Especially when you got little kids, because they're going to get muddy and they track it everywhere. So, but it is what it is. Okay, well, it is the end of a busy broadcasting week for us. My gosh, Election Day, so much. Wow. Still kind of dissecting, digesting the results of everything. What's going to change? I do want to give a shout out. I've been seeing a lot of concession speeches, you know, concession posts and things like that. People, you know, acknowledging that, you know, okay, it didn't go our way. I want to definitely give a shout out to Mayor Julie, who yesterday had a really lovely one. It was I really appreciate what she did. I thought she was a good mayor. It's unfortunate she doesn't have another term to continue with the work, but she put a very, very classy, very, very thoughtful post out there for people who supported her and really kind of touting the work that did get done. And she's not going anywhere. She's got a servant's heart. She's in it for the right. And remember, these are free jobs. You don't get paid for these things. So it's a big sacrifice. So hats off to her. Hats off to her.
Yeah, it's always nice, you know, reading messages like this where it really kind of gets to the point, you know, things didn't work out the way we wanted it to. But at the same time, we're going to keep pushing forward and we're not. Yeah. I mean, how easy, and we've seen it in past elections where I didn't win. Okay, take my ball. I'm going home and I'm done. You won't hear my name for four more years.
Yeah. And she does. She talks about here. Community and things like that they're not things we inherit passively. They're built by people willing to engage, listen, participate, and stay involved, even when it's difficult or disappointing. It's never easy. And even as a job, when you are an elected official, you're on council, you're the mayor, you're a council member, you're going to have people ticked off of you. Half the time, you could have half the city ticked off at you. The other half is going to love you. It's not a job for the faint of heart. You've got to really be committed. And again, it's about principles. So, you know, I don't know what the future looks like. I have a sense of probably what it's going to look like, but I'll refrain from commenting on it. But I think this was a really lovely, very well thought out, very classy post from our mayor.
Yeah. Overall, I think after the election, I'm seeing more of this come out, which I'm happy about, especially as you move up beyond. I mean, the mayor is now decided. The Salem City Council has been decided. But we do have, you know, statewide elections still coming up in November. And seeing overall the message being we need to convalesce, we need to get together, and we need to put those petty differences aside and work together for the greater good.
And I'm generally seeing that out there. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing a little bit of the sort of the rumblings of, well, my guy should run third party. We should write my guy in. Knock it off. That's what I got to say to that. Knock it off. Yeah. This is the time for unity, the time to get together. Plus, Oregon, for those that want to do a write-in, there are state laws. It is the sore losers statute, ORS 249.048. Candidate, it's not legal. A candidate for nomination of a major political party who fails to receive the nomination may not be the candidate of any other political party or a non-affiliated candidate for the same office at the succeeding general election. Mm-hmm. So you can't do it. Don't do it. Don't mount a grassroots thing. The candidate is Christine Drazen. Oregon Republican voters have spoken, and that is who they have chosen. So that's your candidate.
Well,
support her.
And I sit here and I go, let's, you know, jump in our time machine, go back 4 years. And I sit here and go, you know, we had Betsy Johnson. She didn't run in the primary. She ran as a third party. And I sit here and go, that's good now, because off the top of my head, I can't think of a third party candidate that would even seem semi-viable that could step in to put things sideways in Oregon right now.
Well, I don't know that viability is the metric here, because I can. In fact, a couple of names popped into my head as you were saying that. There are a lot of pot stirrers out there in Oregon, and we all, especially if you're on X, you know who they are. They don't really add anything to the conversation, but they sure whip people up. And the bottom line is this is a unique opportunity to oust one of the most unpopular Democrat politicians in the country. This woman is a disaster. She is horrible. Oregon has completely, I mean, that doom spiral, it seems, feels like it's speeding up. So there's a unique opportunity for Republicans, NABs, and disaffected Ds to come together to make real solid change. So I would ignore the people that are out there trying to whip up the hate, whip up the disgruntleds, and the the people that are just pissed because they didn't get their way. Like I said, yesterday was a day to lick your wounds. Now get over it and focus your energies on winning. That's what you want to do. You want to win.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I just sit here and go, we need it. I'm feeling it. Even to a certain extent, I think the local news organizations are starting to feel like this could be a time of change in that, you know, a lot of the reporting, it's they're not hiding the fact that Governor Kotek is not liked. They're not relishing in it, of course, but it's no longer become, we need to keep this on the down low. I think that the winds of change are strong enough that these news stations are running polls and questions of, are you thinking of leaving Oregon simply because of the economics of it and the tax base?
Well, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because there's a KATU poll, because a lot of people are, because it's just that a lot of people, if you're over a certain age and you want to retire, can you really afford to retire in Oregon? Can you? I know I have family members who are in Washington. They're like, I can't afford to retire here.
No, I mean, I saw somebody else did one. K2's got one currently, but somebody else did one last week. And you know, the respondents were in the 60% range of people have at least contemplated or explored the options of leaving Oregon.
47 minutes ago, it's up to 79% that are thinking about it. When you've got 79% of people taking a poll thinking about leaving your state, number one, they're the people with the means to do it.
Yep.
So that means they're high earners, most likely, or middle class high earners. They're going to take, they may be business owners, so they're going to take that with them. If they have a multi-generational and they've got families, they're taking those people with them. This is an absolute disaster for a state that is already an absolute disaster.
Well, and that's the thing is, you know, when I saw the report a week or so ago, they literally tried to preface it with, well, these are just people thinking about it. They're not, it's a big difference between thinking and moving. And I go, if close to 80% of the people are thinking of moving, if 20% of them were to pack up and leave the state of Oregon, we hit rock bottom very quickly, because those are, again, those are people that are out there paying the taxes. They aren't the ones reaping the benefits of it.
Right, right. And again, you had a lot of people, COVID got a lot of people out, because, I mean, it was really the Kate Brown's boot on everybody's neck for a long time. Kotek has been worse than that, worse than her. And again, the taxes and the piling on. So really what needs to happen, I think there is still hope if you're still there and you want to fight and you're not going to, you want to, a lot of people are like, I'm going to stay and fight. Okay, well, figure out what that looks like. What is standing in, it's not tweeting. It's not pounding on your keyboard. It's actually showing up, doing the hard work, supporting candidates, running for office yourself, really getting in there and doing the hard work. And that's what you have to do, because you have to think about it. Your tax money is fueling and funding that with which you are fighting. If you have school-age kids, you're sacrificing them to the altar of a terrible public school system. So there's all kinds of metrics that need to be involved in whether you stand and fight. And a lot of people have made the decision that the battlefield is no longer in Oregon. It's in a red state. But that's a personal thing for everybody that they have to, you have to decide that. But it's something to think seriously about.
Well, I just sit here and go, and, you know, bring up the school system. They get paid per student. You know, that's how these schools work. And one, people are leaving these schools in masses. And imagine if 20% of the people leave and they take their children with them. How much worse are our school systems going to get when, you know, we're already hearing they're underfunded? No, they're not. They're not underfunded. They're poorly, you know, spent is where that money really goes.
And then the answer is always to demand. Really, it's not even ask anymore. It's to demand more. So you're sort of in a sort of a catch 22 in the state, where you've got the people that would have voted to put a Republican into office. Many of them have already left. So the population is now shifting from sane NAVs, disaffected Democrats and Republicans that would vote for sanity. That number, that metric is shifted. But it's just a natural thing. I mean, I'm looking at the comments in this KATU thread. Already did. I already have one foot out the door. I'm only here for my job. I'm only here for my grandkids. I'm only here from this. But as soon as those things change, I'm out. And it's a long, I am scrolling, mm-hmm. scrolling through this thread.
Well, and the other part of this is we now have a generation of leaders. Seattle, New York are prime examples of leaders who believe that businesses are the enemy and businesses are the bad guys and businesses shouldn't make any money. And I sit here and go, but businesses are what employ the people. So now if businesses are a portion of that 20% that actually packs up and leaves, how many more people does that affect in the trickle down of now they don't have jobs?
Yeah. And now that you brought that up, I mean, we were watching that as far as in the Salem mayoral and the city council election, that narrative was being spun by, frankly, the Democrat progressives who ended up coming out on top with the exception of one seat in Ward 6. I haven't seen the actual counts, mm-hmm. but that was the messaging. The businesses are the bad guy, or oh, the other side is supported by businesses, with a sneer on a face, or you could feel it coming through. So you don't like what's going on, what you're hearing about Los Angeles or New York or Seattle? Well, buckle up, because mm-hmm. y'all kind of just put that same ideology in charge.
Well, and you know, look closer to home. I mean, look at Portland, 35% vacancies in downtown. Yeah. Yeah. And now there's a lot of signs that the Portland Trailblazers may not actually stick around.
I heard that. Let's go ahead and take a break, and let's come back. We'll talk about those big city mayors and the big cities and what Salem might be looking forward to. Ooh, exciting. All right, we're going to take that break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care and Color Tile of Salem.
So, yes, talking about those Democrat, progressive, communist, Marxist, pick your poison. It doesn't matter anymore. It's all the same ideology and all the same thing.
Yeah,
frankly, right? Would you agree with that?
That's just, I mean, very simplified. No matter what name they want to throw at you, that they are. I don't, you know,
big government, anti-freedom, anti-human,
anti-business,
in many respects, pro-abortion,
anti-business, anti-science. I mean, what else is there?
they scream
pro everything.
But they keep getting elected, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And then it's in the big cities. It's in the big blue cities where you got these people. So I was just looking at that. We talked about Katie Wilson, the mayor of Seattle, the little one who still, you know, mm-hmm. got mommy and daddy helping her. 40 years old, never done a damn thing, but now she's mayor of Seattle. She's walking back those stupid comments. You know what? I think it's all overblown how many businesses are leaving with her up talk. And as for the ones who are, bye. Well, she's walking that back now because, first of all, it was a dumb thing to say. And she fears the fears mount, especially as Starbucks is saying, well, bye to you too then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like when you have iconic businesses. I mean, you look in the greater Seattle area, there's Costco, there's Starbucks, there's Nintendo, there is Microsoft, there is
Amazon.
Massive businesses have started in that area. And yet these progressive policies, whether it's building an Amazon center in you know, AOC's section in New York, which she got shut down, whether literally the coffee giant, the biggest coffee giant in the world, being told, no, we prefer you not, you know, waste your time here. I'm just going, that's where your tax base truly is. Whether you believe the rhetoric that big businesses don't pay taxes and there's no taxes from businesses, that's as false as can be. I'm not saying there isn't a lot of sweetheart deals in a lot of ways businesses operate at the expense of the public, but between the taxes businesses pay and the taxes that their employees end up paying, that's where the majority of our tax base comes from.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, when we was like, are they dumb? No, they're not dumb. Well, in some respects, I think they are. They're economically illiterate.
Well, that goes back to the schooling part. When we have a generation of leaders who truly believe that businesses are bad for society, their education failed them somewhere along the way.
And somebody attaining wealth is somehow taking wealth. Like there's just one, a finite piece of pie there, right? And so if I take a piece of pie, I'm depriving you of a piece mm-hmm. of pie. That's not how that works. Ayn Rand really kind of had it. She was really from a very secular, selfish point of view. And I, whatever you think about Atlas Shrugged, that 60-page speech, never got through it. But People who are out, if they're looking out for number one and they're going out to build a business and they're filling a need, filling a niche, all of a sudden, a lot of that builds jobs, that's a tax base and all that, to demonize that. And granted, capitalism, we don't really have pure capitalism in this country. It's crony capitalism. It's been corrupted, but it's still better than Marxism or communism, which is what these idiots are peddling. And then what they do is they come in and they campaign as, look at Spanberger, Wilson even too, as moderates. Biden did the same thing. I'm just going to return things to normal. So the people that don't dig beneath a headline go, oh, that sounds good. Because, man, it's been really chaotic. And so that's how they capture people. And then you get this in Seattle. And you get, have you seen the videos coming out of NYC? Uh-huh. A summer storm and the whole place is freaking flooded.
Yeah, they go from giant piles of feces-filled snow to literally New York City becoming one giant lake. I mean, watching people wade through this, get off the bus and the water's knee high.
That poor woman. Yeah. Who tried to get off and it literally swept her off her feet down the street as she was trying to get off the bus.
This is the biggest city in the United States of America and they have knee high water running through the streets.
I know
you go speechless with it. I mean, what do you even say at this point?
And again, you talk about scope creep and all these things that are not literally one of the things that the municipal government is to take care of the infrastructure. And what we have seen failure. I mean, he was barely in office.
Well,
and they had this snowpocalypse and they couldn't figure out how to plow the streets.
Well, aren't they now really as the city is flooding at this point? Aren't they now touting that they should have their first community owned or government owned grocery store opening up in the next few months?
They've upped the timeline. I thought it was like 2030.
Who knows? I'm just sitting here going. I mean, I don't remember the date. It was a few days ago when I saw the little post about it. But I'm still just going. So what? People can now wait in the water to get the bread lines. I mean, because that's kind of the direction we are headed in a very fast way in one of the world's largest economies of New York City.
Yeah, and again, and I love New York. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite places in the world to go. But I won't go now. Mm-hmm. I will not go. It's been a while since I've been there and I love it. Same thing with Seattle. I was supposed to go to Seattle in the summer and I'm not going. And a number of reasons is I don't want to have my car broken into when I'm at a venue up there enjoying an event and I'm just not going to do it. It's the same thing with Portland. And so when you start having that and you start having more and more people take that tack, you talked about the Trailblazers because we're not sure. They have a new owner, right?
Yeah. So the Trailblazers have a new owner and right as that deal was coming to completion, the NBA came to Oregon and met with the governor. The governor announced that they're going to find ways to upgrade Moda Center to keep the Blazers in town. The NBA announced that Seattle and Las Vegas, the two most likely destinations if the Trailblazers were to pack up and leave, are now being considered the only two locations being considered for NBA expansion franchises. And then we get the Portland City Council interjects themselves and says, no, we're not interested in doing anything for the Moda Center or, you know, upgrading. And if the Blazers come and go, it is what it is. And now yesterday it was announced that the Trailblazers have laid off, I think it's around 70, you know, office style employees, including a few that have been there for nearly two decades. And which, if you know anything about pro sports, this is kind of a precursor to packing up and changing locations.
So, like, bye.
It's coming closer, and it is. I think in a lot of ways staring us in the face. I mean, those 70 office people that they have laid off are the local people that have, you know, lived and worked in this community and been a part of the Blazers program for as long as they have. These aren't vendors. These aren't, you know, security. These are people that are backstage making sure that everything goes right for an NBA franchise.
That I get like a pit in your stomach when you hear that, because that goes away. Now, where one of the cities was Seattle. Seattle have a basketball team?
No,
the Sonics
moved to Oklahoma. Howard Schultz, going back to the Starbucks thing. He sold the Sonics, 15 years ago. And with that same commitment we got with the new owner here in Portland, if I'm not going to move them, we don't want to move them. We know they're a historic franchise in Seattle. Well, 2 years later, they packed them up, moved them to Oklahoma City. So there hasn't been pro basketball, NBA basketball in Seattle in about 15 years.
So yeah, what you're just describing, the layoffs and the things like that, that's usually step one, and that, mm-hmm. that they are packing the bags.
Mm-hmm.
Packing the bags.
Well, I go back and because, you know, I grew up in the Seattle area. I've read a lot of stories about the period of time when the Seahawks were on the verge of leaving Seattle and when the Mariners were on the verge of leaving Seattle. And the first thing, literally, the Seahawks were at a point where they had packed their bags. They had moved a training facility out of state for offseason workouts. And then it was a last minute buyer who kept the team in Seattle, Paul Allen, with the commitment to, build the franchise up. And we don't have anybody like that because we've chased them all out of town.
And so then you said the Portland City clown still decided not to do any upgrades to the Moda Center.
At this point, they are not interested. I don't even know if it's something they're willing to talk about at this point. Granted, they had to deal with their budget shortfalls and, to the point where I guess there was an uproar last night in the council meeting because one of their budget cuts was, we're going to keep this firehouse open, but we're going to take the fire trucks out of it.
Oh, my gosh. Clown sill.
I mean, I'm just sitting here going, wait a second. So you're going to pay people to sit there with what, buckets of water? If anything happened, they can go running out the door with water buckets? I'm confused.
And you wonder why people are making that decision and weighing all the pros and cons of should I stay or should I go now?
Mm-hmm.
Hat tip clash. but I think there's a lot of people making those decisions, yep. And it's going to be interesting to see. And then, even within the city of Salem with the change in leadership and the change and sort of a re-bringing back in this progressive Marxist communist, whatever, Democrat, what that's going to do to the city.
Yep.
I don't know. I guess you just look a little north and you can go, that's what's coming. All right. And if you're fine with that, great. Awesome.
Is it scary that we can look north, we can look south, we can look east, yep. We can look in a lot of directions right now as major cities are crumbling under that type of leadership. And yet here we go.
Wow. All right, everybody, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Come on back on the other side.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
I probably should have given us tissues for this next story because it's
an end of an era.
It's the end of an era. End of an era. Babylon Bee headline is the best, though. Nation looks forward to not watching Stephen Colbert one last time. Guess tonight is his swan song. It's all over. I'm sad because he killed a franchise. I loved Johnny Carson. I watched it as a kid. It was the best. You did not know his politics. You did not care what his politics were. So Stephen Colbert ruined it. He killed it. Mm-hmm. He killed it. Unfunny, boring, stupid idiot killed it.
Well, and I just sit here and go, but he's not alone because right now I believe that there's five, comedians, and I'll put that in air quotes at this point, that are running these late night shows. And of course, they all got together for a group photo as Stephen Colbert is calling it quits.
I just have to correct myself. He killed the late show. That was David Letterman, which I loved as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I loved as well. Go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off.
But so you got these five guys, and I've been seeing this post all over social media right now, pointing out, they kick and scream and want DEI and equality equity so badly, but yet it's five middle-aged white guys controlling late-night television.
Oops, you're not supposed to notice that. You're not supposed to notice that. But I remember when late night was funny. I remember the late show with David Letterman. I remember Chris Elliott was the guy under the seats. I don't know if you remember that. And he was Chris Elliott was so funny. Oh my gosh. It was so, and it was, stupid pet tricks. And it was the end of the day. You watched it after the news when people used to watch the news, and it was just fun. And you had interesting, funny guests. Now it's like rage clapping. It's like if you're a progressive Democrat, Marxist, socialist, communist, again, I should just come up with an acronym. He's speaking to you. It's not funny, but it gets you rage laugh clapping because it's sort of reinforcing your worldview. But it's alienating most of the rest of the country because most of the rest of the country is pretty sane and pretty normal.
Well, and that takes us over to the USA Today opinion piece that says Stephen Colbert's late night tantrum finally goes dark and pointing that out. And this is, it's echo chamber mentality. And it's virtually the internet before the internet in terms of all these guys are doing is preaching to their choir. Nobody who has any different think is watching these anymore.
No,
they're not funny. They're just preaching. And I sit here and I go, and it's like when they get a guest that they might not agree with politically, who even questions anything, it becomes not funny. It becomes an argument. And I'm just going, so they don't even invite those people on those shows anymore. No. So you're missing a good portion of the entertainment industry in terms of these celebrity interviews.
You make a good point, though. They don't even invite them on anymore. But the shows that do are pulling in the audiences. You look at Bill Maher, who is mm-hmm. a classical liberal, who I don't agree with most of the stuff, but a lot of times he's calling it out. He's like, I'm a liberal, in the classical sense as being a liberal. And he'll have them on, and he'll get into some really, mm-hmm. he's got that one where he's in his basement and they're smoking cigars and drinking whiskey. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't red pill these celebrities that are in such a bubble. Mm-hmm. They're in such a bubble. They have no idea how the vast majority of the rest of America is. And when the one with Jerry O'Connell was amazing. And there's been some other ones on there who really just, they're so earnest and they're so sure in what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And he just sort of, he pinpricks those bubbles and breaks them. And that's interesting. Gutfeld on Fox is another one where he'll have people on that aren't necessarily conservative. They may be center left. They may be a little bit left. They may be not political at all. And it's just funny. And they see, they understand what their role is and their task is to entertain. That's it.
Well, and that's the thing. These are broadcasts. Those couple you just mentioned, they're broadcasts that are, you know, technically like news opinion kind of shows.
Right.
And yet
right.
here we are with sketch comedy and late right. night comedy shows that are absolutely the worst and insufferable if you don't agree with them 110%.
It's like Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, I mean, I was a little kid when it first came on, but I do remember watching back in the day when it was very subversive comedy and you were like, I can't let mom and dad know we're watching this.
And that's the thing, is that was borderline adult entertainment at right. the time, where uh-huh. now, of course, you can go on any streaming platform and find virtually anything you could ever want. But I sit here and go, they were pushing the envelope and funny about it.
Yes. The writing was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny. And you just, this piece you talked about, the USA Today, Letterman, when he was helming The Late Show, pulled in an average of 7.8 million viewers per episode. This was his first year as host in 93. And then, by comparison, the top-rated current late-night talk show, which is Fox News' Gutfeld, is pulling in 3.3 million viewers. Because the demographics, people don't gather around, because the monoculture is over. We don't gather around and watch the same shows anymore. We don't sit around a TV and then go to work the next day and talk about, did you see who Letterman had on last night or whoever? You know, I think back when it was Jay Leno on The Tonight Show. Mm-hmm. Who was great too. We don't have that anymore. So everything is very fractured, very siloed, which is really a shame. And it's part of the reason why things aren't as hot and great as they used to be.
Yeah. Well, let's see. In 2025, Colbert drew an average audience of 2.5 million. So you said it was 7.5, you know,
7.8.
Yep. At its peak. And it's a third of that with Colbert at the helm. And there's a number of reasons, but one big one is that he's alienated 50% of the country before he even stepped to the mic.
Another one, he's arrogant and he's not funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that he's not funny.
But that's become progressive comedy. It's just right. not funny.
The rage clapping.
Yeah, it is. Most of these people that are even in the audience, they're only clapping because a sign told them to. It fits right into their moniker of you only do what you're told.
That's true. Having been in those, there's a sign.
we're about to go live. Put your masks on and clap when the sign tells you to.
And it's such a shame because we've lost so much as a culture, I think, because of this. And I don't know whether, I think they're more of a symptom of it, mm-hmm. of what's been happening. And it's taken a while. I think mid-2000s is when it really started to go. And so, yeah. And when you're tuning in, that's why I appreciate Bill Maher, frankly. Again, more of a classical liberal who is not afraid to tell the truth.
Well,
and it's not my truth, your truth, it's the truth.
Well, and that's, you know, what is the true direction of comedy? I mean, I think it's really the bigger thing where we've lost skit comedy, we've lost late night talk shows. Even I believe Netflix came out with the roast of Kevin Hart here in the last couple of months, which white progressive women, aka Chelsea Handler in particular, raging at a couple of white comedians that were on the panel for making jokes that could be considered racially, you know. I'm just going, it's a roast. Kevin Hart, I'm sure, had plenty to say about any joke that was told on that dais, and here we go.
That really is the death of comedy. You mm-hmm. have to be able to skewer sacred cows. You got to barbecue them.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't do that anymore because, oh my gosh, someone may be offended. And again, if you're being offended, you're choosing to be offended. It's not my problem that you're offended. Get over it.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice if we could all just take that mentality? I always say to my kids, I'm like, you know, I have one kid that flies off the handle if she feels like she's attacked, offended, whatever. And my constant words to her are, you can't choose how people talk to you, but mm-hmm. you can choose how you can react to them.
Exactly.
And you need to be able to control your reaction, because if you can tell, you're the one constantly getting in trouble because of your reaction.
Well, and you look at sort of that, you sort of pull out a little bit and look at the electorate writ large, and that's how a lot of people are voting, and they're voting on emotions. Everything is now emotion driven. It's all about feelings, and it's all about, I mean, where you've got victimhood is now the big social cachet. The more, how many victim boxes can I check? How many videos have we seen? Well, I'm neurodivergent, and I have diarrhea half the time, and I'm bloated, and I have gas. And then somebody else will one-up you with something else. I've got freckles, and, you know, it's like, man, not here. I've got this talent. I'm well-read. I know these things. I'm passionate about art or whatever.
I can write in cursive.
I can write in cursive. Oh, my gosh. Oh, we didn't even get to that.
Well, wait, we could just make that our big thing. You know, Newsmakers at Noon, we write in cursive.
We read it, too. What does it say? The ultimate theft, make it a standard shift, stick shift car. And put mm-hmm. the instructions in cursive, and it'll never be stolen. All right, let's go ahead and take our last break. You want to come back and talk about boomers and Gen X and Zoomers? And
we might have. Well, we just kind of started with it with cursive.
Okay, let's do it. We'll finish out the week with that. All right, we'll take a break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli.
Hopefully everybody whose candidate didn't win went out and got themselves a gabagool and a little cannoli, and they're feeling better now.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of options. You could have gone, as we just heard a minute ago, Adam's Rib, too.
Oh. The best.
Yeah.
Meat.
The last time we were over there, picked up a nice rack of ribs and some pulled pork. My wife had a burger.
Stop.
My kids had chicken, chicken tenders or whatever. And I'm just going, and for the price, I was going, you can't really beat this.
No. And it's delicious.
And I ate from that absolutely rack of ribs delicious. For 3 days, and gosh darn it, it was wonderful.
Meat's a treat-a. Yum, yum, yum. Well, speaking of food and going out to food, we were talking on the break how neither one of us, I've never used DoorDash, I've never used Grubhub, I've never used any of those things. I haul my carcass up off the couch, get in the car, and go get it. Or I send the mustache. I'll send the mustache.
I have never done DoorDash. I have friends that I've been in the same building with that have ordered DoorDash.
Yeah.
And I've partaken in what they ordered from DoorDash. I have used Uber before. I think the last time I was in Vegas, I had to, use the Uber thing simply because I thought it was my turn to, pay for the ride after my friends got the last few. DoorDash, I'm going, I don't know. I have this feeling that if I can't get my butt up out the door and go pick up what I want to eat, I probably am better off just eating at home.
I was going to say, here's a really radical idea, and it's kind of what we all did coming up. I mean, I graduated high school into one of the worst economies that came out of high school in 81, and it was bad. It was before Reagan got things going. We cooked at home. I ate a lot of ramen, and I ate a lot of – my favorite thing was this bag of pasta and vegetable mix that I would get, and I would get chicken breasts, and I would dump ranch dressing. I'd cook it all up, and I ate that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was skinny, and it was good because I didn't overeat anything, but I didn't go out to eat a lot. And even as a little kid, because I mean, I came of age, I was a kid in the 70s, and it was really pretty crappy in the 70s economically. Going out to McDonald's was a big deal, and we didn't do that very often. So it's interesting, there's this tweet out here, Cernovich, whatever you feel about Cernovich is fine, but anyway, boomers and Gen X pack lunches. Not sure why this stuff enrages Zoomers. Boomers live frugally. Gen X, Gen Jones, that's me. Going out to lunch was a big deal. Most of us didn't have long lunch breaks. That's true, especially blue collar. You didn't DoorDash. Dinners were made at home. And he doesn't even DoorDash in 2026. And it's interesting seeing the comments on this thread because, and again, I'm not taking away, it is rough. It's very expensive. Mm-hmm. I have millennials. It is hard. I get that. But it was also really hard back then. The economy I graduated into really sucked. It's a little different now, but we didn't splurge. We didn't do things that we couldn't afford. I remember there's even a picture of me trying to balance the checkbook and figuring out how I'm going to get from paycheck to paycheck. I got to pay the rent. I got to pay the water bill and the electric bill and everything else a second. Well, got to make those choices. So a lot of it comes down to choices and priorities.
Wait, you said checkbook? What are those?
I know. I just dated myself.
Well, no, and that's the thing. I just sit here and I go, right now, with my family, when we go out to eat, $100 is my baseline. You know,
yeah.
I mean, in a cakewalk, and I'm sitting here going, if we were to do this on a daily basis, you know, a lot of bills ain't getting paid at that point. Let's put it that way, because gosh darn it, kids are expensive. My younger daughters, they love their ramen. They'll do ramen as an after school snack. We have all sorts of snacks. We do things. We got meat in the freezer. It's so much easier. And I know it takes a little more effort and a little more things, and especially after a long day. But, you know, this new generation, the ease of everything is creating such a challenge where they're not even working hard in schools and things like that. Because guess what? All the information they need is at their fingertips.
ChatGPT. Well, and the thing is we've got a culture that doesn't know how to do anything. They don't know how to make anything. And again, I'm being overly broad. I know there's people out. Why? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, make coffee at home. I don't make it at home. We didn't have coffee shops growing. I mean, I feel like I'm like that old lady shaking my fist at the clouds. Back in my day, everything was better. And it wasn't. It wasn't better. It was just different.
Yep. Well, if you're making your own coffee at home, then how can the politicians tell you it only costs a cup of coffee a day?
Right? They have nothing to
do. You're taking away talking points.
We don't have any analogies left. What are we going to do? But, you know, as far as like mowing your own grass, doing your own yard work, if you're a younger millennial, you got a family. I mean, do you bring somebody in to do that? Do you have a housekeeper? I didn't have any of those things until I was much, much, much older. Buying the first house, when I bought my first house, I was right around 26, I think. And granted, it was a lot cheaper, but it was in Bush Park neighborhood and it's worth a lot more now. I probably should have kept it. But I did all my, we do our own yard work. We do our own cooking. You do your own repairs. You don't bring people in. You learn how to do it. And again, that may be on parents, those boomer parents or Gen X or Gen Jones parents that aren't teaching their kids how to do it. Because that comes down generation to generation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of, maybe we are just completely flipped over at this point. I mean, talking with Amy as we do every couple of weeks, you know, the average first time home buyer is now pushing 40 plus years old. So maybe instead of in the 20s, so maybe that's the mentality is, you know, I'll worry about buying the house later. For now, I want to live the easy life of having someone come and mow my lawn and, you know, clean my house and this and that.
Yeah. Yeah. It comes down. She's talked about that a lot. I mean, how much you do sacrifice. You sacrifice for the things you want and they become important. But the other side of it, of sort of blaming boomers, blaming Gen X, blaming everybody. We all recognize that there are problems, that it is more difficult. Housing is insane. Wages mm-hmm. aren't necessarily keeping up with things. Food prices, gas prices, we get that. Yep. But every generation has its challenges. It's how you rise to them. And I don't remember this sort of group finger pointing and blaming mm-hmm. everybody else. I mean, I know they get resentful if you use the old bootstraps. They don't want to hear bootstraps. But really, isn't that what it's about? Get in there and make the changes. If you're not, it's changing policies and changing laws. Get involved.
Yep. Well, and that's the thing is in past generations, these problems have persisted, maybe in different forms, maybe in different reasons, but you never felt the animosity strong from one generation to the next. You know, now you're starting to see this animosity of, you know, you've got and you're making sure I can't have.
Right. I mean, I have to think about my grandparents who were born into the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you want to talk? Just read a book. Open up a book, and I mean, talk to your grand. No, I guess they're their great grandparents if they're still around, or great great grandparents. But that was real struggle. but every generation has its struggles. And like we were talking about the victim, sort of the victim cachet and how victimhood and how many boxes can you check? And I'm really kind of over it. I'm like, really, nobody owes you anything. Nobody owes any of us anything. And oh, newsflash, life ain't fair. It's not.
I remember in my late 20s and early 30s working at places with guys that were literally 70, 75 years old. Mm-hmm. And you looked up to them because they had that mentality of, I'm not waiting for someone else to do it for me. I'm doing it myself.
There you go.
I honestly, one of these guys that I worked with, I truly believe that he was going to die working rather than ever take a retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the way he did things. And it was all about, you got to take care of yourself and your family because nobody else is going to do it for you. And we've drifted so far away from that.
We have. And I think circumstances may be pushing us back towards that. I mean, you do a breakdown of sort of the mindset of millennials and zoomers and what each generation is looking for. But I think generally, although, you know, I have my issues with the boomers, and I always very emphatically say, I am not a baby boomer. I do say that. I am Generation Jones, right in the middle of the pack there between Gen X and Gen Jones. But it really has to be, you have to come to a point where it's like, I'm the only one responsible for my life.
Mm-hmm.
The choices I make, the choices you make, it is not everybody else's. And look at the trouble we're in with, you've got scope creep on governments where they're trying to take, government is not the answer, people, as much as the Democrats want to tell you that it is. It ain't.
Yeah. And that's the big challenge. And eventually, especially in a state like Oregon, the camel's back is going to break eventually, whether it's, you know, a lack of money, this and that. I mean, they're closing down homeless shelters in the Portland area. They're closing down, you know, police and fire if they need to. And I sit here and go, so at that point, where do we keep going from there? Because these services that are designed to help are collapsing under the weight of what's going on.
And then you throw in AI on top of it, and you've got whole job sectors just literally going away. And you've got a lot of people that, like we said, don't know how to make anything, don't know how to do anything. And that's not just millennials and zoomers. That's a lot of older generation, too. If you came up white collar, I mean, I can code. Well, AI is going to do that a lot faster than you are now. So I have a really good recipe for everybody for macaroni, butter, and egg. It's really you can make a lot of it. It fills you up. And though, you know, Phil Kirpin, our friend who's on a lot, was tweeting about that. He's like, why don't you get a little spaghetti, a little garlic, a little butter, and you got dinner.
That is, well, in that mentality and getting back to the idea of, let's plan our meals for the week and do what it takes. Even if it's making a big pot of something that we know we're not going to eat in one day, it can become lunches for a few days. It can become dinners if we need another dinner. There's ways to go about things economically, especially right now where we're spending a crap ton of money on gasoline and some other things. And I'm just going, we need to find a way to be self-sustaining without having DoorDash or even run out to a restaurant for $150 a day.
let's make frugality sexy.
There's a thought to end the week on.
Well, do you talk to your parents? You know, like I said, I'll share that macaroni, butter, and egg recipe. It's really good.
That's right.
I make it every now and again to remind me of what it was like to be a poor little artist kid in New Hampshire.
That's right.
Because we ate it a lot.
Just shoot an email to newsmakers@kykn.com for your special life hacks.
Well, that's it for us. It's going to be an interesting weekend. We got a 3-day weekend. We're not doing a show on Monday because we're off. So everybody else is too. So enjoy that. Memorial Day obviously coming up. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. We appreciate you. Have a great weekend.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.